Ladies and gentlemen, today we have Larry Foreman, the DUI guy and the car crash guy, coming out of Kentucky. This man is honestly one of the innovators in this space, and he's one of the first lawyers that really cracked the code on social media marketing and has developed and grown a wildly successful practice. So today we're going to get into the mind of Larry Foreman, the DUI guy, the car crash guy, how he's built a super successful practice and has dominated in his space using social media, some experience, and a little bit of tenacity along the way. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited about this.
So there were a couple of different brands here. I think there was the DUI guy and there was the car crash guy. Right? So did you start as one and then evolve into the other? Or is this just something that you... I really want to talk about your branding. What was your decision-making process in going with the DUI guy, the car crash guy?
I mean, back in 2013, when I graduated law school, I was trying to figure out how to create something from scratch, because that was like, I had a list of plans, which, you know, plans never work. But you got to have a plan.
So 2020, graduated law school?
Sorry?
You said 2013 is when you graduated law school?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Did you have any careers or any like
no,
work
I went
before
straight
that?
Through undergrad, I mean, high school, undergrad, law school, straight through, yeah.
And you're based in South Carolina
Kentucky.
I knew it was one of those southern states.
Welcome to the South, son. But yeah, I started the business in 2013, and I knew that like in order to attract clients, you have to be a businessman. You can't be a lawyer. And I did that not because somebody told me, just because I instinctively knew I have a business slash marketing mindset. I didn't know that at the time. I was just doing things that I was like, I need to do X, Y, Z, you know? I wasn't really thinking like analytically, like this long term is going to make, you know, for the most profit or whatever. So I would say I'm very blessed and very lucky.
So you started in 2013. Did you just accept DUI cases when you started, or did you also do PI? Were you kind of a general shop, or was there a specific plan? Like, hey, here's the only type of case I'm going to work on, and I'm going to just be the absolute best at it.
The latter. Absolutely. I knew, first of all, I didn't have any money. I came from nothing. You know, I remember going to the store with my mom as a kid trying to buy some Legos, and how many times have I heard the answer of, Mom, can I, you know, buy this toy or whatever? And she'd be like, I'm sorry, we can't afford that right now. You know, so that was my upbringing.
I think she let you off easy. We would get hit in the mouth if we were like, can I have this chocolate bar? It's like, you can't even finish the word chocolate before you get punched in the mouth. No, it wasn't that bad, but we were also very poor growing up. So I totally relate. And I'm sure there was a part that felt, man, I don't necessarily have a specific passion for practicing. It's more, I just want to not be broke.
Yeah.
And from there.
Well, my parents have provided me the platform to allow me to create something out of nothing. You know, I had a roof over my head. I had food on my plate always. Those are the two things I know a lot of my colleagues in law school didn't even have. You know, sometimes they would go hungry. I've been talking to a few friends back in law school. I remember those stories. So I consider myself lucky to at least be able to have that. You know, some people came from less than that. So that gave me the opportunity and the ability to focus, like literally hyper-focus, laser-focus on my brand, which at the time, I'll never forget, I was at the law school library. This is like maybe August, September of 2013. I didn't even know I'm a lawyer yet because I'm awaiting bar results, which will be incoming within the next 6 to 8 weeks. And I was Googling in the law school library. I was on my phone. I was trying to figure out what is the definition of brand? Like, what is a brand? How do you create a brand? Because that term was like foreign to me. I was like, I don't know what it is. I've heard of Adidas. I've heard of Nike. You know, I know that relates to shoes. So when you think Adidas, you think shoes. How do I make a brand that makes them think of me? And that's where it all really started.
So you got your bar results late 2013, and you went straight into running your own practice. How did you get your first client?
Internet. Actually, my first case, believe it or not, was the first and last uncontested divorce I've ever done in my career. It was a friend.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you said you wanted to focus on one practice area.
October 3rd, I found out I passed. September 27th, I found out I passed. October 3rd, I got sworn in. October 4th, I filed for my LLC. October 8th, I had my first client. I didn't pick them. I just announced on Facebook that I am an attorney. If you need help, come to me. And that was just luck of the draw. That was my first client. I had like maybe three or four clients in the rest of 2013. None of them were a DUI. My first DUI I picked up was in January of the following year, and that was a friend of a friend. So when you got to remember, when you're building from nothing and you have no reputation, no name, no connections, no network, you're literally just a standalone pawn in a giant pond, you know, or on the giant chessboard, however you want to create this analogy. The beginning is extremely slow. Not everybody may, you know, relate to this. Maybe some people, if you have money to dump like into advertising, because I had nothing. I had less than, I wish I started with nothing. I started with negative 100,000. You know what I'm saying? The law school loans and everything. So the ability to create was stagnated by the lack of funds in the beginning.
Let me ask you this, Larry. Did you think you're going to start your own practice right after graduating law school and pass the bar, or were you potentially planning on working for someone?
I was looking to work for someone. So I had a list. I went to the Career Services Center at the law school after I sat for the bar, and I sat down with Dean Hajek. I'll never forget it. We had a list. I wrote it out literally, A, B, C, D, of things like I want to do, things that I could potentially do, firms I could interview with, fields of law I might be interested in, which will narrow down which firms I'm going to even send an application to, maybe get interviews at. And I believe on that list, item number or letter Q was start your own firm. So there was A through whatever, R, P, Q, R, S, R through S, A through S, excuse me, of something else. And I tried. I interviewed. I applied. I was doing research. I was doing like competitive market analyses. And I wanted to go into blue collar law. Or excuse me, white collar law originally, white collar crime. And I didn't realize how difficult that, like how cornered that market is, because you need to be somebody basically to be working in that. You got to have experience, and I had none of those things. I didn't have a network and I didn't have experience, so I had to start looking elsewhere.
Did you ever consider trying to work for someone after you started your own LLC and after you started getting clients for yourself?
So funny you should ask that. I was offered, because I applied in August. So before I found out my bar results, I applied to work at the public defender's office. In November, so I've been building for about 6 weeks now, maybe eight, somewhere in that vicinity. I actually get an interview with Leo Smith. And Leo Smith is like the second to the public defender, the head of the public defender's office. And he sits me down and he says, you know, if you want a job, basically, we got you. We'll give you one. And I kind of looked at him and I said, you know, I wish you came to me sooner, like 2-3 months ago, because now I kind of already started building. Even though I barely had any clients, I have, again, don't ask me where I got it. I'm blessed with a very sharp instinct. And my instinct told me, don't take it. When I told my parents that I was offered the position and I declined, they nearly lost their, can I swear? I don't know.
We swear
okay,
all the time.
I don't know. See, like on my YouTube channel, I always throw cursey words, but like it's a podcast and I don't know if it's... Anyway, my parents nearly lost their shit when they found out that I've been offered a job and I declined, because I had, you know, I made like $300 so far in the last 2 months. And they're like, are you insane? Like you have this opportunity. And I'm just like, I got another job offer. This wasn't even a legal one in December. It was the same scenario. Like, why didn't you take it? And I was like, I didn't even want to tell them about it because I knew what their answer would be. And this is my decision. Yeah. This is my life, not theirs. So I kind of trusted myself And the job offer was to work for this company. They're still around. It's called the Rawlings Group. They're a subrogation firm.
Yeah, familiar. Mm-hmm.
So, and the terms were really nice. The only downside is you're not really a lawyer. He just likes to utilize people with a JD background and even an Esquire next to their name, you know, licensed attorneys, that is, for those of you unfamiliar. Because for whatever reason, we make better employees and it's easier to train us, I guess. I don't know. I never got through the interview process, obviously, with him. But those two came after I already started marketing and branding myself. And you asked me a question I haven't answered yet. The DUI guy came first. The DUI guy was the brand that started it all.
When did you form the DUI guy?
Officially, it was around October, November 2013.
I see. So you had already started your brand before any of these offers came in?
Before those two came in, yeah.
I see. So it's a little bit tougher when you already have this brand and it's like, well, I'm the DUI guy. Why am I going to go work for someone else? Like, it's almost like you have this chip on your shoulder where I can't go and work for someone at this point. You know, my story is a little similar, but, you know, I grew up working in car audio and wheel shops, and I had all these different businesses. One of them was just an online store where I would sell electronics online. I had a graphic design company where I would create these basically stickers and decals for other businesses. I had a resale shop where I would sell these air purifiers and, you know, portable welders and things like that. For a while there, I was just trying to flip cars. And then when I got into law school, I also had an apartment complex that I bought using credit cards because I didn't have any money. And so I tried all these different things. But the one thing I did pretty consistently was I shared my journey along the way on social media. And a lot of that was on Snapchat and Facebook. So if you're thinking, you know, 2011 through 2015, I started law school 2012. I'd be on Snapchat all the time and be on, like, you know, Instagram was not even that popular at that time. So it was just Snapchat. And then I'd share those Snapchat videos to Facebook. And anytime I'd learn something new in law school, I'd share it. Like, hey, did you know for contracts, you need to have a offer acceptance and consideration? So this is not a real offer. This is not a real acceptance. And I'd use those hypothetical situations, just post them on Facebook or talk about them on Snapchat. So I conditioned people to know that I'm in law school, I'm going to become an attorney. So I took advantage of those 3-4 years of preparing to become a lawyer to let everyone around me know I'm going to be an attorney. Eventually, you're going to have to hit me up if you need anything. And so it's funny because I got sworn in, I think, November 11th in 2015 in the morning. And I got my first slip and fall case November 11th, the afternoon.
Wow.
I drove 2 hours, came from Snapchat. Someone just swiped up and said, hey, man, my baby mama fell at work. I need you to help her out. I'm like, all right, bro, I got you. And so I went and drove 2 hours to go sign. Actually, no. I actually signed up that case before I became sworn in. Now that I remember,
I didn't hear anything.
No. My brother's firm. The bar, I went to a networking event with a bunch of lawyers, and it was in the morning. It was like 8 a.m. when they had that networking event. I was like, oh, I'm going to get sworn in the following day or the next week. I forgot exactly the timeline, but I told my brother, hey, I got this client. It seems like it's a good case. You know, can we sign it up?
Sure.
So I signed it up under my brother's law firm, and essentially he couldn't turn it down. It's like, look, we'll work out the deal after you get licensed.
Yep.
But I'll do all of the work. So he accepted. He's like, obviously, I'll whatever business you bring in. And essentially, I'd forced my way into employment with my brother. But he didn't want me to work with him because he's like, look, dude, I want you to go and learn your own thing. And I was also a wild child. So he didn't really want to associate his name and his brand with me. And so by December, I actually got a job. I was signing up all these different types of cases, anything I can get my hands on. And another premises liability case came my way. And the former attorney on the file, I called him, said, hey, man, I see that you represented this client. Can you tell me a little bit about the case? He's like, look, man, The money you don't take is way more important than the money you do take.
Yes.
This is a I would not advise you to take. You're going to work a lot of time on it, and you're probably not going to get anywhere. These clients are very needy. I'm like, look, you know what? I'm fresh. I want to cut my teeth. Let me see what I can do. And he was right. I worked on that case for 3 or 4 years and lost on summary judgment. So the next week, he put out a job post. And I went, and he saw that I had been a zealous, sort of passionate attorney. He gave me a job. So from December 2015 to February of 2017, I was working for those 13, 14 months as an associate attorney. I was making like 40 grand a year. So that was how my journey started. Mm. And because it wasn't enough money, I would also go and work at the flea market on the weekends to just sell car audio and wheels. And, you know, people are like, are you an attorney? I'm like, yeah, but you want these rims, bro? I got you. That's how it started. But CEO lawyer didn't start until 2016. Uh-huh. And I think if I would have created the CEO lawyer brand like you did, the DUI guy, before I started working for someone, it would have been very hard to actually make that transition.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally get that. And that explains why you were shocked that my first case was not a DUI case, because nobody, the DUI guy probably didn't even exist just yet, or it was just forming into existence. And as I'm sure you know, with anything, it takes time. And in law school, I was focused on, you know, I was of the mentality, because of my parents, the way they brought me up, focus on education, focus on school, we take care of everything else type thing. And that's pretty much what I did. I had Facebook. That's literally all I had when I was a college kid, when I was a law school student. And I used it just for like personal purposes. I didn't have the, how do I describe it? The mass, it's not mass media, because that's not the, but you know what I'm trying to say. The appeal to the masses, basically. I didn't have that. Not because it wasn't in my personality, but because I just didn't have it yet. I didn't know that that's going to be my future. So the first 5 years was all about learning how to litigate. I mean, trying cases, building a reputation, building a name. It just so happened. And I had, you know, all the time in the world. I was my receptionist. I was my own paralegal. I was my own case manager. I was my own billing department. When people would ask me like, oh, you know, do you have a secretary and all that? I'd be like, I don't. I mean, there's a front desk, but I just pay a monthly fee for, you know, for her to just send calls to me and take messages. That's it. So people were shocked that for 5 years I worked completely solo. It was only not until October, just so happened to be the same month, October of 2018. And I should have made the decision sooner. I was stupid and greedy. For those of you listening, thinking about, should I hire my first person, by the way? Absolutely. If you're feeling the pressure and you're like, but I don't want to share my money. Like, I'm making this hand over fist. It's 100% profitability. Now I have to give 10, 20, 30, 40, whatever percent of that, you know, every bill to a client. And now I have to share it. Trust me, it's worth it. Do it. Because you start churning double, triple, quadruple, quintuple, especially if you got the marketing in place. If you don't, you're in a danger zone. But if you got the marketing in place, trust me when I say this, and you got like the clients coming in, you will be able to suddenly breathe. I had like a breath of fresh air when I hired my first associate, because he started going to court for me. And it's amazing how much time court was eating up, not just time-wise, but stress and exhaustion are also factors. You know, you have to go in, you have to deal with the judge, prosecutor is upset with you, this and the client wants to talk to you. And now all of that, when it's removed from the equation, as a lawyer, all of a sudden you can focus on attracting more clients. You have more time to talk to clients on the phone. You're not as stressed. You're more relaxed. You're more open. You start, you know, opening new channels of advertisement. This was exactly what I did in October of 2018, because I found myself sitting at home at 9:30 in the morning going, I need more clients. Like, I'm sitting here. I have time now. You know, he's in court. So I don't know. That's one thing that I wish I did in 2017. I waited too long. I should have done it at the 4-year mark. I did it at the 5-year mark. But everybody's different. I mean, you, if you had started your CEO lawyer with all that branding and marketing back in 2015, who knows? You might have been at the spot where I was in at the 5-year mark or 4-year mark, which I could have done, but the 5-year mark when I finally caved, you can get there in like 9 months. So everybody's different. There is no like timeline. It's all about the volume. You have to pay attention to the volume. When you start to feel the pressure, when it starts pressing on you, imagine like a hydraulic press. When that starts kind of cracking and caving in, that's when you break. So to avoid breaking, go the opposite direction. Hire someone and that will release the pressure. And I learned that the hard way. I never had a panic attack before until I refused to listen to my gut and hire somebody. Trust me, don't do it.
I have this internal checklist for when I decide I need to hire someone. And the easiest barometer is if I'm doing so many low-level tasks that I can offset, offload, delegate to someone else, then I should go ahead and give it to that person, especially if I believe my time is worth more.
Right.
So if I find someone to do a task of following up with clients, sending out letters, you know, putting together my files, handling, you know, very small chores that need to be done for the organization, those things can be done for 10, 15, 20 bucks an hour or whatever it is. And if my total income for the year, let's say, is $200,000 for the year, and I work an average of 2,000 hours for the year, that means my time is worth $100 an hour. So hypothetically, anything that I can delegate below $100 an hour is worth it for me, especially if I want to go to that next level. But if I keep doing tasks that I know I can have someone else do for a lower amount of money, then I'm pigeonholing myself into a place where I'm only going to make a certain amount of income because I'm too greedy to hold on to all the lower level tasks because I don't want to give up some money. But what I've found over the years is that you can continue to fire yourself from the previous tasks you were doing yesterday and continue to increase your income if you learn the power of delegation.
Delegate.
So I never was really greedy in that regard. It's because I had business experience in the past and I had run multiple businesses before. So I knew internally when I needed to hire someone and when it was time to grow the business. So my first employee was within a couple of months after starting my practice in February of 2017. I'd say I started my first employee that summer within a few months. And I did not have my systems in place. I did not have payroll set up. I didn't know how to really set her up on W-2. I barely had a bank account. So I'd literally just write her a check for $500 a week, and that was her employment. I just cut her a check for $500 at the end of the week. I'm like, look, you figure it out. It's 1099. That's how we do it. And then by October, and I would say, so that's what, from 8 months after I opened my firm, I hired my first paralegal at like 65 or 70K a year. And it was way more than I was paying myself, because I knew the value of this person was going to exceed any small, minimal entry-level pay that I was going to give myself. So I didn't put myself on payroll until the next year. It was until about a year after I started my firm, and that's when I finally started taking money out of the business. And then that put us into 2018. 2018 was the first full year in business. I settled 3.2 million cases and took home a little over $1 million. And then I realized either I can have a job, a high-paying self-employment, or I can build a company. Mm-hmm. So 2019 was the year that I learned how to hire and fire people. And that was a very painful year because I just felt like I was literally burning cash because I didn't know how to hire people. I didn't know what to look for. I couldn't assess personalities and character flaws early on. I didn't have the gut instinct to let people go when I knew they were a bad fit. But it was good that I went through that pain because I learned so much. Mm. And by 2020, I had all this experience. I was sick of not making enough money take home because I made just the same amount of money 2018, 2019, but I took home almost nothing because all of it was dumped back into marketing, hiring people, getting new systems and technology. It was the infrastructure year. But 2020 is when we took off. So was there a specific time in your business where you felt like man, because I did these things in preparation, maybe other people start thinking I'm an overnight success. But in reality, it was all of these years of preparation, all these mistakes that I made, and that kind of created the perfect storm for us to just accelerate and skyrocket.
Sorry, was there a question in there?
Yeah. Where was the point where you felt like my firm really took off?
Really took off or was starting to take off? Because I have two answers for that.
Like, really, where you're like, okay, you know how in your mind you were like, I have this vision of success. And some people think it's like the Lambo chilling on the, you know, penthouse, you know, beautiful wife next to you, whatever. But then sometimes it's something as simple as I don't have to check my bank account when I go to dinner, right? And so, and sometimes you'll get your head out of the clouds and you're like, wow, okay, I think I finally achieved that level of success that I thought I'd been aiming for a long time. When was that feeling where like, man, this thing is really taking off?
Oh, I haven't reached it yet, buddy. That's the crafty answer, if you will, because I have very large dreams, very big dreams, and I'm nowhere near that yet. But to answer your question more directly, I think because it's kind of like I had two points really. One on the marketing side and one on the business side. So on the business side, when my YouTube started generating clients, when people were calling me and saying, "Hi, Larry, I saw you on YouTube. Mm. I want to hire you. You're a badass," whatever. I felt that in 2018, 2019.
Wow, and how many years had you been on YouTube before that?
Zero. Like, I mean, not creating content. I was on there for 4 years, but I had like 6 videos, you know, a video every 6 months, 9 months, you know.
Okay.
It went from 0 to 100 very fast because I cornered a market that didn't exist. I was posting videos that nobody else, for the most part, I cornered like 99.9% of the market. The other 0.1% was negligible because they were all sparse and scarce and spread across the whole of YouTube. I became known as the guy who posts his courtroom videos. I actually posted my work. I posted my trials. I posted me doing me things for my clients. And that has created... I thought my audience was going to consist of judges, prosecutors, lawyers, and law students, and maybe people interested in the law. Little did I know that there's going to be a huge chunk of the population that's going to be very curious and interested in this kind of stuff. Because you're talking about like dry, you know, 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours worth of talking, you know, to a jury, cross-examining cops, talking to judges, you know, making arguments, making motions, making objections and all that. That doesn't seem like a whole lot of fun. I would fall asleep, you know? And this is me doing it. But yeah, when you're in it, it's different. When you're watching it, it's different. But anyway, so that content has launched me into a stratosphere I didn't even know existed. And it was pretty slow at first. But when I say slow, I mean the building of the subscriber base. My subscriber base, I hit 1,000 subscribers on February 27th, 2018. I remember that because that was the first day I made money on YouTube. That's when I monetized. And then from there, it took me about another 10 months to get, well, even more than that, almost a year, to gain like 12,000 subscribers. So I was at like 13, 14,000. Then the following year, which was like 2019 to 2020, there was another like 20 or 30,000 that I gained. And then the pandemic hit, and the pandemic was the most wonderful thing that has ever happened to my YouTube channel. Everybody's sitting at home watching TV, and there's the DIY guy. All right, let's check it out. So I started pumping out all the content that I had. Like, I had a vault that I was slow dumping. This was no more time for slow dump. This was release the Kraken.
Wow.
You know, and so I got that. I ended up gaining like 67,000, I think, subscribers that year in 2020. And 2021 kind of came and went. I don't remember the numbers there. I was at about 200 and 20. No, what am I saying? I'm sorry. I was at 135. I'll never forget it. So this is the second point that I was making in this in answering your question. In April of 2022, last year, about a year ago, I found out that there is a civil trial going on in Virginia. Do you know what I'm talking about?
April 2022, civil trial, Virginia.
Fairfax.
Was it a shooting case?
Johnny Depp versus Amber Heard.
Ah, okay, yeah, that's clearly a big case.
Well, here's the thing. Again, gut versus conscious brain. If I was a true marketing guru, I would tell myself, like, I got to go there. I got to find a way to, like, penetrate into the audience. I need to find a way to market this, da, da, da. My original plan, and I kid you not, was to go there for one day, listen to Amber Heard testify, and go home. Because she was on the stand when I went there. It was May 17th. She just took the stand on May 4th. She testified on May 5th, which was my birthday. It was a Thursday that year. And then there was a long break. So they don't have court on Friday. They took the week off, whatever. Anyway, long story short, I ended up going there. And my subscriber base not only doubled in nature. I went from like 130 to 260. I also, from zero to heroed on Twitter, because I became a source that of information that nobody else possessed.
Yeah.
I was inside the courtroom reporting on the jury, what we saw on the jury, because nobody was talking about it. And when you become the only person who talks about it, people notice, especially A-list celebrity type trial. So I went from like a collective, let's call it, if you take all the Facebook and Instagram, which I don't really have a lot, like my Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, and some other platform that I have. I have like 11,000. I have nothing. It compared to everything else, it's really nothing. I had a collective of maybe 150,000 to close to 500,000 collectively.
Wow.
And I just crossed the 500,000 barrier when my YouTube channel hit 300,000 a couple of weeks ago. So I'm there. I'm on my way to that million, but I'm more interested in YouTube because YouTube is where now I do lives. You know, I have, forget like all the marketing things for a second for your law firm. This is just fun for me because these people who watched me at the trial are following me now, a huge chunk of them. And they're like, oh, Larry, I saw you at the Johnny Depp trial. That's where I found you, blah, blah, blah. Because there were millions and millions and millions and millions of eyeballs on this. And so when you suddenly, out of those millions, you know, you have maybe a few thousand that stuck around and watch you on a regular basis and are officially fans. They like you. They like your personality. They like your character. They like how you talk. They like how you explain things. They like how you make them laugh. They like how you make them cry. They are dedicated fans, and it came from the trial.
So it seems you're saying April 27, 2022 was probably that in the week thereafter when you went to the Amber or the Johnny Depp trial, that's kind of when you sort of blew up online.
My online presence skyrocketed. Yeah,
right. You went from 130K to 260K subscribers on YouTube. You started getting all these followers and people just listening to what you had to say because you were the only legitimate source reporting from inside the courtroom. You actually went to Virginia. You dipped out of Kentucky, went all the way to Virginia, just so you could get that inside scoop for people. And from there,
And that's the thing. In the beginning, I didn't even know that was going to happen. It was pure coincidence. It was pure coincidence because the Monday I sat there, I watched my colleagues because I was there not by myself. I was with a couple other lawyers from YouTube. And one was from Canada, one was from Virginia. And the three of us just ended up, you know, connecting right there at the trial. They're taking notes and I'm looking at them going like, why are you guys are taking notes? Like, what's the point here? Little did I know it was about to evolve into something magical. And because I remember this is actually how it happened. I love telling this story because it's just so cute. I'm sitting in the courtroom on a Tuesday. My colleagues didn't get in because their line holders got – there were too many cutters basically, line cutters that day because Amber is still on the stand. It's hot fire. It's cross-examination. It's probably the hottest day of the entire trial. This is where the trial truly collapsed for Amber. And everybody and their mother wanted to get in there. So I got lucky. I got nothing but lucky because my line sitter was sitting in that cluster of line cutters. So I got in. They didn't, because their line sitters were like numbers 67, 68, but they ended up being like 112, 113, and they only let the first 100 people in. So I'm sitting there going, well, I kind of owe it to them. You know, they were taking notes yesterday. I wasn't. Now they're not here, so I'll take notes for them. And as I'm sitting there, and before the first, not even lunch break, this was the morning break, I remember there's a tale that I just remember from Twitter about this guy going viral, doing something, just reporting something on Twitter. I've never really used Twitter before. Twitter to me was a foreign country, basically. In 11 years, I had like 800 followers because I don't tweet. I didn't know how to. And what I started doing is I started tweeting my impressions of the jury on Twitter during this trial. And I kind of tweeted. It was really complicated because the building is like, you know, like most courthouses, they're like concrete. So yeah. I literally had to like get out of the courtroom. You have 15 minutes maximum, 10 if you're unlucky, before the judge gets back on the bench. And you're walking from the courthouse. You have to go all the way downstairs. So you're on the fifth floor. Now you have to go to the first floor. You have to go out in the courtyard. You're in the middle of nowhere, you know, like trying to find a signal. And I would just tweet as quickly as I could, as my fingers would move or as my mouth would move. And then I would go back. During the lunch break, when I had a little bit more time, I just kind of like started looking at it, and I realized I just went from 800 followers to like 15,000 in the last 2 hours.
Wow.
That's when I knew. I was like, I think I'm onto something.
You know, and so the crazy thing is, you're talking about 2022, yes. April 2022, when other people would hypothetically think that you just blew up, that your business just kind of skyrocketed in terms of your business and your online presence. But really what happened was about 9 or 10 years of preparation to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And consistent content creation and production and being in the right place at the right time and learning the nuances of communicating online,
building absolutely a
subscriber base slowly and just earning that grind over the years. And so I don't think anyone else would have been able to have that same sort of impact like you did, because you had all those years of experience. And so I'm sure some people look at you and say, oh, well, you know, you just went and listened to the Amber Heard, Johnny Depp trial. And because of that, your whole business, you know, kind of blew up and your online presence skyrocketed. No, you know, as a master artist, it wasn't the 30 minutes that it took me to make the painting. It was the decade of experience that got me to the point where I knew exactly what stroke to brush and what brush to stroke and how to create this beautiful painting for other people. And so you might think that intuitively, I just went outside, put a little Twitter post out there, and that was it. But because you had exposure for the past 10 years, you knew, something told you, this was important enough to go and document. And this was important enough to take notes on. This was important enough to be a good colleague to your friends. So
you're giving me too much credit, because, again, I'm still chalking a lot of it up to right time, right place. But once you nail it, you capitalize on it, no question. Because there, you can abandon ship and be like, well, whatever, I'm done here. But when you realize, oh, my God, I need to keep churning and burning, and that's exactly what I did. Once I realized the gold mine, the diamond mine I'm sitting on, oh, by God, did I start mining. Oh, my God.
But,
yes.
But I think, so you're calling it luck, and I think luck is just a byproduct of consistency and hard work. If you're consistent enough, you will get lucky. If you're any baseball player in the major leagues, if they have enough at-bats, they're going to hit a home run. Even the worst basketball players, at some point, they're going to be able to sink a free throw or some, you know, three-pointer, or they're going to have some sort of game-winning shot, game-winning touchdown if you're into football. There is, with enough at-bats and enough opportunities, you will get lucky. And I think you also have to give yourself credit, because you spent 9 years just grinding and not really being quote-unquote famous, but you were earning that reputation. You were working along the way. So you had this muscle memory at that point. Most people wouldn't have that. So you did say, well, I didn't squander the opportunity. Exactly, because you knew what was in front of me. But then there are people that, like, I've seen guys that go 6 million followers on TikTok and have no business at all. They have no idea how to manage this reputation or manage the platform that they've built. And you seem to be doing very well with doing it the hard way and doing it the right way. So I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about your business. So where's your law firm now? How many employees do you have? How many offices? What kind of cases are you taking? What's your intake look like? Tell me about your business.
Okay, so I finally bought a building for us. We're on 4th and Oak in Old Louisville, a stone's throw away from the courthouse, about a mile. We have 13 offices in that building. The third floor is pretty much vacant. I just have a couple of tenants up there. No attorneys yet, but eventually it will get filled up with future departments. Like right now, we do three types of cases. We do criminal law with primary specialization in DUI work. Okay. We do personal injury with primary specialization in car accidents. And we do all sorts of immigration law, because I now have an immigration lawyer on my team as well. So those are the main three pillars. And right now I'm looking to expand, and this is one of the first things that you talked about when we started this podcast. The car crash guy, where did he come from? The car crash guy originally was actually, it's a sister brand, obviously. The car crash guy evolved. I used to have business cards that I actually even changed. I called myself the DUI and car crash guy for a minute there. But then I realized it's getting a little too crazy, because people were like, oh, so you only call Larry if you were in a DUI and a crash. No. That's not what I mean. And I quickly scrapped that whole idea. I realized it's not working. And I abandoned it for the longest time until I met my new marketing guy, who is a former TV, not exec, but like the notch below, or maybe he is, I don't know, don't quote me on this. I forget his exact position, but he was way up there. He was like managing like the account execs. Like he was up there. Very sharp guy, very nice guy, very smart. I was doing an interview one day and he stopped me on my way out and we talked by my car for like 20 minutes. And so when he quit the department and started his own firm, I took the plunge and I said, look, man, I don't know what you're about, but I'm in. Take my money, and show me what you're made of. And he's delivering. He's definitely delivering. We shot a brand new commercial. I told him my vision. I told him what I want. I told him where I'm headed and where I want to be headed. And so he is helping me in bringing my vision to life, basically. And the car crash guy, the sister brand, which is now a standalone, I know it's bad. I have a separate website. I have like three websites. I have like an overarching umbrella website that links to the three websites, but each one has its own domain. And I know it's bad, and people have told me it's bad, and you're not supposed to do that, but I don't have much of a choice. Because one is like the car crash stuff, one is the DUI stuff, and one is the criminal stuff, right? I don't even have an immigration website, because that would be too much.
No, I mean, you can change it into LarryForeman.com or LarryForemanLaw.com/the DUI guy/the car crash guy/criminal defense.
And so, I could.
And the other way to do it is when someone goes to the car crash guy or to the DUI guy.com, it just goes car crash guy.LarryForemanLaw.com. And that's just considered a subdomain so that you can have access to all of that. That traffic on your website, because something similar happened to me where my law firm is called Ali Awad Law, and I was running Google ads and YouTube and pay-per-click, all this stuff for my law firm brand, but then my social media brand got bigger than my law firm brand. And so now I had AliAwadLaw.com and then I had CEOLawyer.com that were kind of competing against each other. And I also have all these different sub-brands like the CEO Media, the CEO Lawyer Academy, the CEO Lawyer Bootcamp, the Mastermind, the Summit, the Vault, the Speak with CEO Lawyer. So I had to have multiple conversations and talk with people much smarter than me about how we can take advantage of all of this traffic. Because the last thing you want is for your brands to compete against each other and to alienate each other online. And if you have people searching all these things, you just use a forwarding link. And so now everything falls under the CEO lawyer umbrella. And because of that, we now bring in so many cases from just our organic Google presence because we get hits everywhere. And so you can tell people, hey, go to theduiguy.com to, you know, to find out more, to enter for a chance to win, or check out the car crash guy for this new video, or follow this, right? What you're doing is just generating traffic. And the way Google works, if you have enough traffic coming from concentrated areas, then your name is just going to start popping up consistently. And so now when you search CEO lawyer, all my TikTok videos and YouTube videos and brand, like, we own that entire just page after page after page. So there is a way that you can consolidate those brands. But so, sorry, I kind of.
No, I like it. You're giving me ideas, and that's always good. I like good ideas, and that's a really good idea. I have that LarryForemanLaw.com, which is my main domain. That was the original website that I built in October of 2013. And the sister websites are like KYLawClinic.com. I copied the Florida, the misdemeanor clinic, and they have the ticket clinic. So I created one in Kentucky. It doesn't really generate a whole lot, but it's enough. And then the carcrashguy.com, that's a separate. So instead of having separate domains, I could have LarryForemanLaw.com/thecarcrashguy or LarryForemanLaw.com/KYLawClinic, and then just kind of delete those other domains and create subdomain. Because Larry Foreman Law is the original, and that's the one with the best reputation. So
yeah, well, I wouldn't delete them. I would just use them as forwarding, because I'm sure just the web domain alone, thecarcrashguy.com, is worth a lot of money.
Touche. When I meant delete, I didn't mean like erase them out of existence, but I meant like to where you, if you go there, it, I don't know.
Automatic. Automatic forwarding, because you don't want people to go to, hey, go to LarryForemanLaw.com/DUI guy. That's just too much. The DUI guy is a great name. The car crash guy is a great name. Those are super valuable even before you put any sort of effort into them. So you bought a building. Yeah. And
I filled it up.
How many employees do you have currently?
So we have four associates. My case manager is also an attorney. Stephanie, she's the best. And then we have Tyler, Chris, Evan, and Tracy. And then myself. So in all, we have six lawyers. And we're now at seven, give or take. It constantly fluctuates. Seven employees. And all of them are off-site. I mean, I have my maintenance guy. I have my marketing guy. I have my they're basically all contractors. So I don't have like employees on base, because I don't need that. I don't have a need for it. But I have I even have a list. I have my of counsels. You know, I have my publicist, my maintenance guy, my shorts editor, my thumbnail maker. We have our maid, IT department. I mean, alarm system, all of those people. I think we're at like 13 or 14 total, all of us. But consistently, only six show up to the building, which is nice.
And that's mainly the lawyers.
Yes, yeah. The lawyers are the ones who basically occupy the building. The rest come and go as needed.
So where do you mostly spend your time now? Are you still actually managing cases and clients yourself? Or are you more like the rainmaker, the marketer?
I'm the rainmaker marketer, straight up. My job duties, like you talked about firing yourself. I actually never heard anybody refer to it that way. I kind of like it. It's cute.
What it is.
I refer to it as like taking hats off, you know, because you're wearing so many hats. The more hats you can take off and put on other people, it's delegation. You still said the right, I mean, it's the same word. It's, you delegate, you know, you're delegating work over to others. And that is a very hard thing to do, as I'm sure you know. You sound like me. I'm a perfectionist, you know. I like things to get done a certain way. And when they don't get done a certain way, sometimes you get that little OCD inside of you. And you need to learn to let that go, you know. Because if you don't, you're going to micromanage everybody.
You're probably more similar to my brother, who I would say is more of a perfectionist than I am. But I'll tell you this. Here's my philosophy on business and hiring. I will never find someone that can do 100% of what I do. If I did, right, they would have their own company. So I can probably get someone to 70 to 80%. And then I can probably find another person that'll get to 70 to 80%. And those two people together will get to about 150%. And if I can duplicate that over and over and over again, eventually I will find enough people that can do the majority of the work that I'm doing so I can focus on the things that no one else can do. So I am a perfectionist, but I care more about progress. You know, I like my cases managed a certain way. I like the client experience to be done a certain way. But I know that there are peaks and troughs in a business. And sometimes the priority is not customer service. Sometimes the priority in your business is not marketing and bringing in more cases. Sometimes the priority is not hiring more people. Sometimes the priority is not trying to save as much money as you can. Sometimes the priority is not delegating to other people. The priorities change as you grow your business, and you have to know what season you're in. The season that we're in now is optimization. I don't need more marketing. I don't need to spend more money in marketing. I've found a way to double my revenues every single year. And now I've realized it's not because I'm spending so much on marketing. It's actually because I'm maximizing the cases that I already have. So like in the DUI world, you know, it's something as simple as, well, our base fee is no longer $5,000. It's now $10,000. Yes, 20% of your clients and prospective clients are not going to accept that. But now you have 80% of people that are going to accept the $10,000. And that's how you strategically increase your values on your overall revenue.
Less clients, more money.
Exactly. Yep. On PI, it's a little bit different because you're going to get a lot of cases. I mean, we at any time, our inventory is thousands of PI cases, and that's all we really focus on. But in order to strategically increase my revenues without increasing the amount of staff, I have to maximize my case values. The problem is not everyone comes in with a catastrophic injury, broken bone, surgical case. You have to sort of build those cases up. And so what we do is anything that we don't see a potential value of at least 25 or 50K or 100K, we just refer it out to another law firm that we've vetted and we've tested and we make sure they know what they're doing. But our team only handles the higher value cases in-house. So we can consistently increase our standards for the types of cases that we bring in, which will essentially inflate the case value across the board. And that will allow me to have less cases per team member, increased revenues per team member and firm-wide, and it'll allow me to afford paying them more each year, which I tell my people, I want y'all to make more money every single year, but now it's my responsibility to make sure I can afford it. So I don't really consider myself a perfectionist anymore because I saw dumber people growing faster than me and making more money, and they weren't as good. You know, it's like, you could be the best lawyer in the world, but if no one knows that you exist, you're not the best.
Running a law firm is about 5% being a good lawyer, I've learned. When I say being a good lawyer, I don't mean like doing good work, but I mean you can be the creme de la creme of litigators and be completely unknown because you spend 95% of your time lawyering and 5% marketing. Running a business, and I'm sure you may agree or you may not, or maybe your numbers are different than mine, but it's about 80% marketing. Some people will even go so far as to say 95% marketing, but it's 80% marketing, 15% like running a business, and then 5% lawyering.
Well, I would say that was my 2018, 2019. I would agree with you. Now, I would say 30 to 50% of my time is spent with leadership development. And so I spend a lot of my time.
What do you mean by leadership development?
Well, so I have like 70 plus people in my organization. And
that's a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to be at 100 by the end of the year. But I don't expect them to know everything that I know from day one. And especially with leadership and how to manage a team. So I have to train them on how to hold people accountable, how to establish KPIs, how to know when someone is not doing their job, or how to know when an employee is taking advantage of. Similarly, when you need to back off a little bit and let someone breathe, because everyone has different personalities. And the specific struggle that we're going through right now is empowering my leadership team to have the confidence to fire people when they feel like they're not a good fit anymore. Because when you bring on new people into the organization, new lawyers, new directors, they don't want to come in and complain and say, well, this person sucks, and say that within the first week or two. So it creates this environment of, well, I shouldn't just complain about this person. And now that person starts to fly under the radar. But what they're doing is it's a cancer that's developed in the organization, and you're not giving your doctors and your surgeons the opportunity to operate on it and remove that cancer before it metastasizes. So you have to build a culture of confidence in your leader.
Damn.
But at the same time, you don't want them to think this is a place where we can just complain. So we have these meetings every week. I'll spend 2 hours training with my team, my leadership team, and teaching them these business concepts. And I can't teach you what I've learned over the past 20, 25 years as a business person, business owner, but I can get one step closer and keep inching away at it. And we learn how we work together and how we communicate with each other. We get better at it. But now most of my time is spent in leadership development. I would say probably 5% of my time is spent marketing. And I would say,
oh, I'm sorry. When I said 80%, I don't mean I spend 80% of my time. It's the, in order to propel your firm to the next level, you have to make sure that your allocation of resources is spent in that direction. I guess
Regards. In my marketing spend in 2019, marketing spend was probably about 80%. And now increasing my marketing spend in proportion to my revenues does not increase my revenues.
I see what you're saying. And I'm in the same boat, actually, the more I think about it. Because now word of mouth became like our number one client generator. I don't know when that happened. Don't ask me. But it came out of the blue. And for the most part, it's like some people, like the passers through, you know, the clients from New Jersey, California, Ohio, they're the Google generated clients. But the ones who are local here, they're all, oh, you helped my friend's cousin's uncle's father's son, you know. And yeah, anyway. Continue. Sorry,
no,
I didn't mean to cut you off.
I think referrals are just, they are a manifestation of being a good attorney. That just happens naturally from doing good work for other people. And so we spent so much time just getting new business. And then at some point, it's like, I don't want to just keep getting new business and keep buying to get more leads and more cases coming in the door. I want to develop a methodology where my existing clients, my employees, anyone that I come in contact with is like, no, if I need a personal injury attorney, I'm going to go with CEO lawyer. So that's where leadership development comes, and that's where I spend a lot of my time now. 2-3 years ago, it was really training my paralegals and case managers on how to just become rock star paralegals and case managers. And now...
You're in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm in Atlanta. And now it's really... Yeah, I would say 30 to 50% leadership, culture, team building. Probably 5% of my time, energy, and resources goes to like marketing. 25-30% is actually active outside investing in similar experience, knowledge that I have. So I get approached by a lot of attorneys that want me to invest in their firms and to help them kind of skyrocket their business. There's a lot of guys that are stuck at seven figures. They're trying to learn how to get to eight figures or multiple eight figures. And most of the time it's because they're just really good marketers or they're really good litigators, but they haven't really fortified their business. And we have these operations that we can just kind of plug and play into other people's businesses. And then there's also the events and the coaching programs and all that other stuff. That's more just for me to tickle my entrepreneurship fancy. Like I like to do other things, but by and large, investing in my team members... After investing in myself, first, I spend six figures a year just in personal development and coaching. But then you have to start doing the same thing for your team members. And you start ridiculous ROI on those. So that's where I think, and depending on where you are in your business, you got to know where's the proper place to spend that money. So example is I spent $50,000 to join a real estate mastermind and coaching program. Well, why would I do that? It has nothing to do with my business or my firm or anything. Well, we're looking to buy a new headquarters. And so I know from my experiences that smart buying decisions can change your life and change your trajectory. So if I figure out a way to buy at the right time and I can get tenants like you've done or you're planning on doing in your building, and you can strategically purchase it to where you're not eliminating too much cash flow from your business, and you can kind of copy paste this over and over again, you can grow your real estate portfolio strategically just because you've learned something that someone has learned after doing billions of dollars of transactions. So I just pay for other people's knowledge now. And if I can do the same thing for my employees and say, well, hey, there's this book that costs $50. I think everyone needs to read it. Go on Amazon, book it, send it to your house. Next week, we're going to read the first chapter together. That's kind of where that leadership development and training is. So that's the direction that I'm going. But I am curious about where you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years. Like, obviously, million subs, I think that's going to happen. You know, I think you're going to continue to grow the business. You're going to continue to expand. But what's that big, hairy, audacious goal? As you mentioned it early on, and I'm curious about what it is.
The audacious goal is to own a jet and to live abroad while the business is running. At least, not like permanently, but I just got back from Italy, and I was there for 2 weeks, which felt like 2 months minimum, because of all the things that I've seen and all the places I've visited. But the ultimate goal, again, and I'm learning just now, finally, it took me this long to learn to delegate, to trust my team to do jury trials, and to try and train my team to do jury trials, because that is the hardest. That is the penultimate in any case, is a jury trial, especially in a criminal case where a client's life, future, freedom are all on the line. You know, it's a little different in the personal injury side. You lose, they just get $0. They go home. You know, you lose in a criminal case, your client has a permanent criminal record and potentially is going to jail. Much bigger stakes, much higher stakes. And so to learn to kind of finally, the final nail, if you will, to allow my team to give them the trust, give them the tools, give them the capability, and to have faith in them to start litigating their own jury trials is definitely, this is only something I've been doing the last month. That's how recent it is. 1 month ago, I had 17 jury trials on my docket over the next four months. That's pretty much a jury trial a week. Some weeks there I had two. And I realized, if I keep this up, I will not survive. I can't. And again, this is not greed. Trust me, it is all but greed. It is the fear that the client is not going to receive the best possible representation. Because I didn't know, like, can I? It's not even so much about trust. Because I trust them that they're going to do good work. But they're not going to be doing the type of work that I can provide, you know? I know that, but at the same time, maybe they can do better. I started to realize, you know, watching them work and seeing the results that they're capable of, I need to spend more time with them. You know, I kind of feel that I usually work from home. I'm like in my ivory tower while they're at the office. And I don't know. I have a different mentality. I like my quiet space. If I get distracted too much, and I'm afraid if I'm always in the office, they're going to be constantly asking me questions and I won't be able to work, which is fine. But it's impossible for me. I don't know how you manage. I mean, like you said, you have leaders in different departments that have your hats on, basically managing those departments, hiring, firing, etc. I'm still the leadership department. I am the managing department in my firm. I don't have like a office manager yet, you know, and that's going to be my next step probably. But again, and there's another problem with that. If I put too much faith into them and they start slacking, the whole thing can fall apart and collapse. So it's got to be like a slow process of how I'm going to get there eventually. And I don't want them. I'm very laissez-faire, you know, hands off. Let my employees do whatever they need to do. They travel all over the state. They drive a lot of mileage because we cover criminal cases all over the state of Kentucky. And a lot of the court appearances are in personam. Judges don't do Zoom. They're backwards, you know, backwoods judges. And no offense to them at all. I get it. They don't like technology. They want to see a person. COVID is over, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. So anyway, I feel like I'm digressing here. But the point is, growth is especially when you're building from scratch, as you know, it can be a slow process. It can be a fast process. Compared to my colleagues, I am miles and miles and miles ahead, most of them. You, like, I'm looking at you and I'm like, holy shit, this guy is, you know, on another level. But it's not a...
It's because we have different colleagues.
And that's exactly what I'm getting. It's a different environment, different colleagues.
We're smaller. You can't be the smartest person around your colleagues. And the truth is, I don't like hanging out with other lawyers most of the time because they're stuck in old school mindset. You need to hang around billionaire real estate developers and super successful entrepreneurs and see how quickly they're growing. And that's where I spent the first 3 to 5 years of my practice was I didn't want to go to other law events and see what every other lawyer was doing. In fact, you know what was the one question I asked every lawyer before starting my practice? This was the requirement. This is the barometer to figure out whether I should listen to you or not. And it might seem aggressive, but the question was, how long did it take you to make your first $1 million? And anyone that gave me a two-digit number, like, oh, 10 years, 15 years, I'm not interested in that. I've been broke for far too long, and my parents are immigrants, and we've struggled, and we've eaten shit for so long. I'm not going to spend 10 years to make $1 million. I want to talk to the person that did it in 9 months and see how I can do it in 6. And if your goal is to get, so first I wanted to tell you, the goal of private jet in Italy is cool, but you're not going to get there unless you have other people that can go there with you. Because I'll tell you, I have the ability to do that now. In fact, I'm planning on going and living 6 months in Dubai just for fun because my firm works remotely and I actually don't have to be involved with the business. But it's not enough for you to be the only winner. You have to be around a lot of other winners. And I really want all of my lawyers to become millionaires and I want them to become successful. The fastest way that you're going to get to that point is by bringing other people with you. And if you really are top of your game around all of your colleagues, then elevate them, you know, and some of them might not be worth it. There's probably a handful of them that are like, yo, I like what you're doing, Larry. I'm along for the ride. How can we all make money together and how can we dominate this? And I have some colleagues that are like that too, but the vast majority of them are not going to fit because the vast majority of them are not in the top 1%. By nature, the top 1% cannot compare to the bottom 99%. You want to be excellent. You can't hang around average people. High performers don't like hanging around low performers. So I think the way that you're going to accelerate that growth and get to that point of private jet, Italy, traveling, doing everything, having your business run on its own, you got to take people with you.
Interesting.
Because look, man, if you're the only person that can actually run the business and you're the only one that can actually train everyone else and you're the best lawyer and you're the one that's always investing in all these other people, how can you step away?
That's the problem. That's exactly, like, even this 2-week trip that I just took, I was working every single night. You know, the time difference definitely helped, but I mean, you're doing a tour from like 9 a.m. to, let's say, 3 p.m. You get to eat dinner, maybe do a little bit of shopping. You come back to the hotel room, it's like 7 p.m. It's 1 p.m. in the United States. Your day is over. You're exhausted. And your workday is just getting started, you know? And now you're working 7, 8, 9, 10. There were nights where I would go to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning because I've been working so long.
I went to Italy earlier this year for a couple of weeks, and my team didn't even know I was gone. In fact, I actually get more cyber attacks on my business where people are trying to, like, you know, send you these, you know, hey, they'll create a fake email and say, hey, this is Ali. I need you to go and get these Apple gift cards for me.
Yes.
And so
we get those. You get those too. Okay. I'm glad I'm not alone.
I stopped telling people when I'm out of town or out of the country. And on average, I'm out of the country 2 to 3 months out of the year. And this was part of my, like, from the very beginning, I was like, if I'm going to build this thing, I have to be able to do it my way. And the exact moment where I knew how my business needs to run, I kid you not, I was on the beach in Jamaica in June of 2017, before I hired anyone, before I met my wife, before I started anything. Back home, I was living with a roommate, spending $300 a month in rent. I probably had 40, 50 cases that I'd working on at the time. I just started my business 5-6 months prior. And I could wake up in the morning, get a nice continental breakfast with my boys, prepare our trip for the day. Like, oh, let's get the kayak. We're going to go to Negril. We're going to go, you know, jump off this cliff here. We're going to do this. By 10 a.m., I can go to my laptop, fire off some emails, talk to some clients, give them some updates, and I'm done for the day. And I don't have to look at it until the next morning. And I realized I could actually run a completely remote business. And if I have this lifestyle where I can travel and go anywhere I want and the money still comes in and the clients are still happy, not only is that going to keep me in the game for a very long time, I know any employee and any other lawyer that I come across is going to want that same lifestyle. And so I created that. That's how our business sort of developed. And from there, that's why I told you in 2020, our growth skyrocketed. We tripled our revenues. We quadrupled the size of our team. And every single year, we've just been adding more and more and more. When everyone else was shutting down and slowing down, we just kept accelerating. And now I just have to kind of step back and optimize and think, okay, we're doing fine. I mean, we on a daily basis,
I see it.
We'll probably settle between $100,000 to $600,000 a day in personal injury settlements. And I'm not involved with any of those cases. So it is a multi-8-figure practice. And most of my time is just spent developing my team and developing my leaders to get that to that next level. But it's not enough that I'm the only winner. So I made a goal where all of my attorneys, within 3 years of employment, they have to become millionaires. They got to make $1 million a year. And the first person already there. The second thing, at the end of the year, I made a huge end of year goal. And I told everyone, look, next year, we are going to have our end of year party in another country. And I'm going to take all of you on a jet and we're going to, and you're going to bring your spouses and your children. And I'm going to also bring babysitters so that y'all can actually enjoy yourselves. When we go to the beach, we're going to have a good time. And I'm going to fly in all of my virtual assistants from all over the world to come to this end of year party. And in order to do that, here's what we need to do. And I laid out the three main goals that we had to do that basically touched every single department. I said, if we hit these three goals, I'm going to take all of us on international vacation. And that'll probably cost me between $250,000 to $500,000. But you know what it's going to do to your culture and your retention and to just the morale? Wow. Yeah, man. It's like, and plus, like, the content's going to be fire. You know what I mean? Like,
that's badass, dude. That is crazy.
And you know, you can do that.
I'm taking mine to Vegas next weekend. That's all I can afford right now.
Huge, though. If you make that, like, you're taking your team to Vegas, bro, other lawyers are not doing that.
You? No, I don't know anybody who's ever done that.
And you have to document it. Like, do you have a full-time videographer?
No. Wait, so what do you mean document
it? You have to get this on video. So I have four full-time videographers, and I have like six video editors and graphic designers. Damn. Well, you need to have at least one.
Okay. How do I hire one? Do I just get one in Vegas or what? Meet us at the airport?
No. You should have a full-time employee that's a videographer. 100%. Okay. You probably can find an intern. The best videographer that you're going to find is going to be between 18 to 24 years old. That's going to be someone that's interested in YouTube, that loves your brand and would literally work for anything just to be around you. And I know what you're thinking. Well, I spend a lot of my time at home. Guess what? I'm at home right now doing my podcast right now. I have a studio in my basement. I invite my videographers to come to my house once every couple of weeks and we shoot content. And then whenever we're traveling, hey, y'all are coming with me. Let's record this thing. And you have to document your people. And I'm so deep with my videographers that even for this end of year party, I'm going to hire other videographers to document my videographers having a good time, because it's like this self-fulfilling prophecy of everyone is seeing how well you're doing. And because of that, they want to join the ride, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know about you, man, but I like putting that extra accountability on myself. So when I make an announcement on social media, or I'm doing something like right now on the 75 hard program, I got to drink a gallon of water a day, 2 workouts a day, read 10 pages a day, stick to a diet. When I do this public accountability, I feel like everyone is watching me. You got like 500,000 people watching you. So if you say, hey guys, you get a videographer that records you meeting with your lawyers, and like, all right, we're all going to sit in this room. Hey guys, here's our goal for the next 3 months, 6 months, 1 year. If we hit this goal, I'm taking all you guys, boom, or I'm going to do this for everyone, or I'm going to pay for this. And you post it online, you get other people excited about that journey, and you hype them up. Your talent acquisition for your business is going to skyrocket because everyone wants to join the winning team. So if you look at my old content from 2019, bro, I was posting checks every single day. Like, hey, our goal is to make $1 million this month. Here's the first check. And I'd literally like write this thing on this, you know, little thermometer thing. And I'd, you know, fill it in on the whiteboard. And I'd show people every single day. And every year I had this new challenge and it would keep growing and growing and growing. And then 1 year I actually failed and I showed people, look, guys, we failed. We didn't hit our goal, but here's what we did. And here's the reason why we failed. We're going to change that for next year. I created that accountability and now it's like second nature, you know? So 100%, if you're taking your team to Vegas, you need to document it. Hire a videographer, find someone that's willing to work for 40 to 60K a year. They're going to help you so much with delegating all your Instagram, Facebook, all the content production side. And then you hire a VA, like a video editor underneath them in another country to edit the videos for them. So they're not doing the behind the computer work. They're doing the in front of you with the camera work. Because dude, you're a local celebrity. You're famous in your town and you're not really taking advantage of it. You should. I have a fraction of your subscribers on YouTube, a fraction of them. And I know how hard it is to build on YouTube. So kudos to you, man. But like, you can accelerate your growth and your revenue and your income by letting people watch the ride and your journey to success. This is more important than the content that you're producing for your YouTube subscribers. It's important that they see that you're also a successful lawyer and you're bringing other people with you. And they're going to want to follow the ride. You're going to have clients that are going to want to hire you just because of how you treat your employees. You're going to have other lawyers quit their jobs to come and work for you. Everyone is paying attention. And you have the brand. You already have the exposure. I don't think you're capitalizing on it.
My mind just exploded. I'm not going to lie. I thought this was going to be more of an interview, not a learning session.
Well,
I really appreciate
it. I don't
that.
Lie, dude. The whole point is for us to know each other. And yeah. I'm also learning a lot from you because I know I'm slacking on YouTube. And I could be doing better. And next time there's a big opportunity in the market, I should capitalize on it. I didn't even think about potentially flying somewhere when there's a major trial or so. Like, that didn't even cross my mind. Twitter, I freaking suck at Twitter. But I know that there's opportunity. You can kind of combine all these things. So believe me, it goes both ways.
I'm glad that I was able to impart some knowledge. But man, all right, this is definitely outside the scope of the interview. Let's get back into it to make sure that you get what you need. But I do have one last question. To capitalize, you have the stage, basically. You have the tools. You just need to capitalize on it. It's about showing people, because everybody wants to be on this ride to success with you. And showing it is literally having a videographer follow you around. Like, and that, what was that one movie with Jennifer Lopez when she just married a complete stranger? I forget what it was on Netflix a while back. It doesn't matter. She has a videographer literally following her around, documenting her entire life because she's like a celebrity in this movie. Blah, she's a celebrity in real life too. And basically have this videographer follow me around and how I am in my own natural habitat with my employees. Because the trip to Vegas is just one thing. I mean, it's only going to be a weekend. What about the rest of it, I guess, is what I'm asking. What do you mean when you say show it and capitalize on it?
What you're showing the audience right now and you're showing your subscribers is only what you think they want to see. And it's not what they think they need to see. And what they should be seeing is your overall success in the business, how you treat other people, behind the scenes. And the reason I'm such a huge proponent for a videographer, my fourth hire for my company was a full-time videographer, is because you get to show people a different side of you, and it creates this brand that people fall in love with. And so they're not just following you for the legal content that you're giving them. They're following you because they actually love you. And that creates such a strong cult-like following that now anywhere I go in Atlanta, because we get 20 million impressions a month in Atlanta on our site. Anywhere I go, people recognize me.
Nice.
They're taking pictures and tagging me on Instagram and stuff. And it's cool. Like, I like that recognition. But it's also, this is my city. Like, no other person, no other lawyer that comes into this town is going to have anywhere near this type of exposure. And it's the same in your town. No one should even come close. And you're going to do it completely digitally. No billboards, no radio, no TV, none of that shit. You can do this completely digitally. And if you have a videographer, here are some of the things that they can do for you. Number one is every time a client comes in to either meet with you or whatever, or they're happy with the result, you get a client testimonial on video for them. And this becomes content that you can produce on YouTube, on all different social media channels. The next thing that they can do is they can record you in the courtroom or record your lawyers in the courtroom, so you can use it for training purposes, but also additional content. Anytime you do any sort of event for your employee and show how awesome of a boss you are and why people should be incentivized to come and work for you, that content needs to be documented, needs to be recorded. In addition, the car crash guy, I feel like you've been a DUI guy for so long. With the car crash guy, they can just go out and find car crash videos, and you do reaction videos to them, because you know the world of PIs has so much more money than the world of DUIs. So all these things can happen just with bringing on a videographer, and your cost is going to be maybe a couple grand a month in having that type of investment, but you're also going to offload so much of your production time with content. So I do spend a couple of hours every other week shooting, and everything else my team handles. And so I can leave for 3 to 6 months. We have 8 months of content in the pipeline right now. I can leave for the next 8 months and I don't have to do anything. And it's going to continue to grow and continue to evolve because we've built that team. But if you really want to go to that delegation on steroids, you got to delegate the thing that you're strongest at, which is your marketing, because that's actually your weakest link. Your lawyers are not your weak link. Your business model is not your weak link. It's your marketing that's your weak link, because you haven't delegated enough and you haven't entrusted anyone kind of take over. And the thing,
the memes that I post on Facebook and Twitter can only go so far.
You know, you mentioned this earlier that, hey, these people are not going to be as good as me in the beginning, but maybe they are. Maybe they can get there. They can get there with your guidance, and then they can exceed you because you're not going to continue to be sharpening that knife. Content.
I want them to be. I've been hiring people smarter than me since my first hire, you know, because I know it's not about ego. It's about building a successful business. So you have to sacrifice a little bit and be like, all right, well, they're better than me in so many things. I may be better than, you know, in some other aspects, but it's not a competition. It's about building each other up, like you said.
Yeah, and I think that's going to happen for you. I think you're going to get everything that you want. All I'm saying is you can get there much faster.
Touche. Videographer. Got it. Anyway, okay. Where were we?
Are you a big coffee drinker?
Oh, I love coffee. Yeah.
There's this Death Wish coffee that it's like the highest concentration of caffeine. It's bad, but that was kind of like my thing. I wake up in the morning, I have one or two shots of espresso with Death Wish. I'm good to go.
Yeah, I know the brand you're talking about.
But Larry, is there anything you wish I would have asked you, or anything you would have preferred to discuss during this interview?
Man, I forgot we were even doing an interview. to be completely honest, my mind has been fried with the information you've provided me with, and I'm forever grateful because I think with this knowledge, I will say, honestly, take this as a testimonial, please. You have my permission and authority to do so. Um, I did not expect to learn this much from you, because you've been in this game much longer than I have. Maybe I, you know, have a little bit more on the numbers side and all that, but you understand, because it all boils down to human psychology. This is what people forget, because you have to look at human beings as creatures of emotion and sometimes a little bit of logic. Very rarely, though, to be completely honest. And it's the reality of it. And so if you approach it, and this is what all of us, including myself, I'm guilty of the same day in and day out. You try to project yourself and your thoughts and your abilities onto others, not realizing that the individual standing in front of you, whether it be an employee, a client, etc., you know, have their own wishes and desires and hopes and dreams. And if you're not able to cater to that, you're not going to be successful, because it's about other people. It's not about you. You know, my favorite phrase that I've been using since day one of my business, if you make it about the money, you will have none of it. If you make it about the client, you will flourish. Or in this case, you could simply say, if you make it about the people, you will flourish. Because the people are your clients. They are your judges. They are your employees. They are your staff, your videographers, your lawyers, your case managers, your leadership department, your optimization department, whatever it may be. And so the transforming of a business from, because anybody can really be successful. All it takes is good work. Being a good human being, doing good work for people. But you mentioned the most critical thing. If nobody sees it, it might as well not have happened.
100%.
So you just completely warped my mind, because I was like, we're doing great work, but who is seeing it? A handful of people. I talk about it. That's one thing. But when people see it in real time, and, you know, like, we can't have a videographer sitting in our meetings because you have 100% confidential information being thrown around. So that's like, obviously there are exceptions, especially in the legal field. But for the most part, like, I can imagine us sitting around, you know, where we were supposed to celebrate a couple of birthdays, because it was my birthday last Friday, and so Stephanie's were born on the same day. We were going to do a birthday party this Friday, but some things happen, so we're probably going to have to push it maybe to next week or the week after. You know, just having like a videographer or something there to document it, us in our natural habitat, that's something it never even crossed my mind.
Well, it's not just the documentation. It's also, you've got a decade of YouTube content online. If they go out there and just take bits and pieces of it and start posting it on TikTok and on, you know, Instagram Reels and Facebook Reels, you'll have all this content production for the future and reinforce people to go back to your YouTube channel. So there's a lot of potential with, you know, growing your business through a videographer. But I definitely appreciate you giving me my flowers, man, because there was no specific goal in this interview. I wanted to get to know you. I wanted to see what, you know, the branding mind and the knowledge that you have behind the scenes. And you definitely taught me a lot as well. So I appreciate you meeting with me today, Larry. And hopefully, you know, we'll get to meet each other in person and do some work together.
Yeah, for sure. I was in Atlanta just a couple of years ago for the standardized field sobriety testing course and the drug recognition expert course on two separate occasions. I don't know if I'm going to throw some names at you real quick. You may or may not know them. Mike Hawkins.
Is he an Atlanta DUI lawyer?
Yes.
I think I've heard of him. There's another guy, Bubba Head.
I was just about to say Bubba Head. Heck. Yeah, he's been around for like 50 years. So he's the OG. And then Tony Palacios. He's a former cop who teaches lawyers how to cross-examine cops on standardized field sobriety testing. That name, I would imagine, you probably won't know unless you're in that arena.
No, I'm deep into the PI game, so you ask any personal injury lawyer in Georgia if they know who I am, they will, because a lot of them are following me on Instagram. But the DUI was never anything that I learned about or even wanted to pursue, because I wanted to specialize. I focused on one thing and did PI, and I keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into it. And if there's any way that I can help you on your PI practice and standardizing it and, you know, building systems and teams for it, I think there's so much growth potential on your PI side. because I think you're starting to see that there's a little bit of a ceiling with the DUIs because it's going to be a hard time. But for us, we have 6 lawyers and then 60 paralegals, you know, so you can have your team do a lot of the production on the back end.
Wow. Are they all in-house or are they scattered?
No, everyone works from home.
From home.
Yeah. We meet 6 to 8 times a year. So one of the things that we do for our culture building is we do events. So last time was a cookout and we just told them, hey, during work hours from like 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., we're just going to do a big potluck. We're going to bring a lot of food. We're going to play volleyball, just spend the day outside at the park. And then we're going to do a bunch of trivia games and have some fun. And then everyone gets to go home. Another day we just went paintballing, you know, for the whole day. Other day we went go-karting and, you know, top golf or whatever. We always do them during business hours. And the goal is just for people to have a good time. So it's like we work hard, we're also going to play hard. And that's enough for us to maintain a solid culture without having to see people in person every single day. Because I feel like it does the opposite. You start getting drama and workplace just bullshit that comes with people seeing each other all the time. And when they work from home, they can maintain this sort of like level of respect. Because I'm only seeing you for like an hour via Zoom, so I don't have time to come up with excuses, right? We need to get...
There's a lot of truth in that.
Yeah. Larry, yeah. Dude, thank you so much for giving us so much of your time today, man. It was a pleasure getting to know you today, and we're going to put this up on our channels very soon. Ladies and gentlemen, this was Larry Foreman, the DUI guy, the car crash guy, the man, the myth, the legend, the Amber Heard and Johnny Depp trial. You guys can learn so much by following him on YouTube and Twitter and all other channels. I definitely appreciate Larry coming on the show today. Thank you all for coming to the CEO Lawyer Podcast. We'll see y'all on the next one.